Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to join with all of you in extending a warm welcome to Shuhaka Okamura Roshi, who is here to teach us. And Okamura Roshi has been in the U.S. for over 20 years, and for some time he was the head of the Sotoshu International Division of the Soto Zen School International Division in America. And he has devoted himself to the study and commentary and translation of Dogen Zenji, for which we're all quite grateful. Lately he's taken a special interest in the poet Ryokan, about whom he's going to speak today. And again, I welcome you to join us. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm really happy to be here this morning to share some of Ryokan's poem. Until yesterday, I had a 7-day genzoe at San Francisco Zen Center, the city center. And this time we studied Dogen's Shobo Genzo Kai In Zanmai, or Ocean Sea Samadhi. And it was very fascinating writing, but very difficult. I had 2 lectures a day, and 1 lecture is 1.5 hours. So I spoke on Dogen for 3 hours for 7 days. And when I talk about Dogen or his writings, I have to, you know, check each and every word and sentence he used, and also he quote many expressions he used was quote from some sources. In order to understand Dogen, I have to go back to those sources and study the meaning of each expression in the sources. So it took me a lot of time, and I have to be very careful about talking about Dogen's writing. Each word may have different meaning, very special in his own usage. It's different from common usage or meaning, or even the original in the original source. He often twists.
Yes.
Even he used the same word in almost opposite ways. So I have to be very careful and precise. But last several years, right after Genzoe at San Francisco Zen Center, I visit Berkeley Zen Center and talk on Ryokan's poem. And to talk on Ryokan is very different from talk on Dogen. Dogen's poem is really fascinating. Also, it's beautiful as Dogen's writings. But when I talk about Ryokan, I don't need to be so careful. He's not a scholar. He's not a philosopher. He's a poet. I can speak from my own without, you know, going back to the source of Ryokan. Of course, Ryokan also has some sources. That is mainly Chinese poems and some Zen literatures. But it seems he doesn't care so much about exact meaning and the logic, but he expresses his own mind or heart.
Excuse me, please. Before we continue, can everybody hear?
Mm-hmm.
Hello? Better?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Okay, so I'm happy to talk on yoga. And I have been talking some poems in this book, Great Fool, the Master Ryokan. And this is a collection of translations of his poems, both in Chinese and Japanese waka poem. And each year I talked on the poems in certain sections, and this year I'd like to talk some poems in the section entitled Strolling Without a Care. Strolling Without a Care. If you have this book, that is page 192. This expression, strolling without a care, I think need a little explanation. This idea about strolling without a care came from a Chinese classic that was Chuang Tzu. Do you know Chuang Tzu? Chuang Tzu is one of the two most important philosophers in Chinese Taoism. One is Lao Tzu, another is Chuang Tzu, or Soji in Japanese pronunciation. And probably I talked last year that when I talked about butterfly dream, Ryokan loved Chuang Tzu. Chuang Tzu was one of the most important writing or source of idea for Ryokan. And this expression, strolling without care, came from the title of the first section of Chuang Tzu. So in order to understand the original meaning, now I have to return to the source. About what this means when Ryokan or other poets use this expression, strolling without a care. I'd like to introduce few kind of Chuang Tzu is not like a Lao Tzu. This is this is a collection of very interesting stories, and Chuang Tzu express his idea about his life, and this strolling without a care is very important, because I think that is why, you know, maybe this was not done by Chuang Tzu himself, but someone who made a collection of his writings, the person made this title, Strolling Without a Care, or in Japanese, Shōyō-yū. Shōyō is strolling, and yū is a kind of a disporting oneself, playing with, having a good time. And this is a translation of Chuang Tzu by Burton Watson. And in his translation, the title of this section is Free and Easy Wandering. Free and Easy Wandering. I think meaning is the same. And in this section of Chuang Tzu, there are a few or several very interesting stories. The first one is most well known. That was about the Big Bird. Do you know the story about Big Bird? It's not from American TV. Much older. It says, in the northern darkness, in the northern darkness, there is a fish, and his name is Kun. So this living being originally was a fish, but somehow this fish transformed itself into a bird. The Kun is so huge. I don't know how many thousand li. Li is a unit of length in Chinese. And today, 1 li is about 4 kilometers. That means more than 2 or 3 miles. So it's really big. Thousand li, he measures. He changes and becomes a bird. So he became a fish, become a bird. Whose name is Pen. The back of the pen measures, I don't know how many thousand li across, and when he rises up and flies off, so this big bird flies off, his wings are like clouds all over the sky. So his wing is like an entire sky. When the sea begins to move, this bird set off for the southern darkness. So he was in the north, but he started to fly and go toward the south. And there is a south sea, and that sea is also in the darkness. Which is the lake of heaven. The place is called Lake of the Heaven. Then when the pen journeys to the southern darkness, the waters are roiled for 3,000 li. He beats the wee wind and rises 90,000 li. 90,000 li. Setting off on the 6 months gale. Wavering heat, bits of dust, living things blown about by the wind. The sky looks very blue. Is that its real color, or is it because it is so far away and has no end? When the bird looks down, so bird was 9,000 li above the surface, above the land, and he looked down the earth, and it says, all the seas is blue too. So the bird from the up high up in the sky, the planet Earth is only blue. That is a story. And so this is simply a story about a big bird fly up high and see the world, and the world is simply blue. When I first read this, I was a teenager, and around that time, you know, the first astronomer went to the space, I think Russian, and the first person who looked down the Earth from the space said, you know, the Earth is blue. And at that time I was fascinated. You know, Chuang Tzu already knew. Anyway, this, you know, viewing the world from up high, and it's only blue. There's no such, you know, other colors or discriminations. It's only one world with one color. That is, I think that is a point of this story, and this view of the Big Bird is compared with a view of a small bird like us. In the next page, trying to pick up another, not another, but compare this big bird with small birds. And it said, the scalar, do you know scalar? The small insect.
Scalar.
Live only about a week in the summer. The scalar and the little dove, a pigeon, laugh at this, about this big bird, story of the big bird, saying, when we make an effort and fly up, we can get as far as the elm tree, or the sapanwood tree. But sometimes we don't make it and just fall down on the ground. So this small, those scalar or pigeon could only go high as the trees, and still it's difficult, so they sometimes make mistakes and fall down on the ground. Now, how is anyone going to go 90,000 li to the south? So those small creatures laugh at that when they hear the story of that big bird. So those small, like a scalar or a pigeon, are like us, living on the earth, and we see so many different things, and we have our idea of what is good, what is bad, what should be done, what should not be done, that kind of things. So we see many different colors, and we have to make choice to live our lives. So those are two sides of, or two ways of viewing this same world. And of course, because we are living on the planet, we cannot see the world from up high. And seeing the world from up high is what this means, strolling without a care. That means we don't care about that kind of small, discriminated things, but see the reality as just one. So these two sides are kind of similar in with Zen practice. Anyway, this story with care has this two ways of viewing things. And at the end of this first section, Chuang Tzu talks about another story that is about a big tree. There's another person named Hui Tzu. Hui Tzu said to Chuang Tzu, so one of Chuang Tzu's friend talked to Chuang Tzu. He said, "I have a big tree. I have a big tree named Ailanthus. Ailanthus, Ailanthus." Ailanthus. Okay. I don't know what it is. Its trunk is too gnarled and bumpy to apply a measuring line to. So it's really twisted. Its branches too bent and twisty to match up to a compass or square. That means this tree is useless for a carpenter. There's no way to measure it, no way to use it. So this is a useless tree. So this person has such a useless tree. You could stand it by the Lord, and no carpenter would look at it twice. Once a carpenter sees the tree, and it's very clear that this is useless. So no carpenter take attention, pay attention to that tree. And this friend said to Chuan Tzu about his thinking or his teaching. He said, "Your words, Chuan Tzu's words, too, are big and useless." Big and useless. And so everyone alike spurns them. So no one appreciates your talk, such as about a big bird. It's big but useless. It's good for nothing. Then Chuan Tzu said, replying to this friend's kind of a criticism, Chuan Tzu said, "Maybe you've never seen a wild cat or a weasel, the tiny weasel animal. It crouches down and hides, watching for something to come along to hunt and catch, to eat. It leaps and races east and west, not hesitating to go high or low, until it falls into the trap and dies in the net." So those small animals go everywhere to catch their food. And sooner or later, those animals will be in the trap and maybe eaten. That is, I think, another analogy of our life in the society, in the world. We try to, work hard, making life, making, money, and get something we want. So we work hard, but sooner or later we disappear. And everything we attained should be left behind. That is our common life. So Chuan Tzu continued, "Then again there is the yak, Y-A-K, big as a cloud, covering the sky." So again, the huge yak. "It certainly knows how to be big, though it doesn't know how to catch rats." So this big animal don't know how to catch anything. So this is also useless animals. "Now you have this big tree." So Chuan Tzu returned to about this big tree, useless big tree. "Now you have this big tree and you are distressed because it's useless. Why don't you plant it, that useless tree, why don't you plant it in not even anything village?" Not even anything village, this is the name of a place. And literal meaning is Nukau, means nothing is there. So it's like, in Buddhist term, it's like an emptiness. So the village of emptiness. Or the field of broad and boundless. Relax and do nothing. just plant that useless tree in the field of nothingness, relax and do nothing without catching fruits by its side, or lie down for free and easy sleep under it. Acid will never shorten its life. Nothing can even harm it. If there is no use for it, how can it come to grief or pain? Mm-hmm. So from the beginning, this tree has no use, so useless. But what Chuang Tzu is saying is, if we plant this useless big tree, because it's useless, no one try to come and cut it to use some for something. So the tree can be really big, and even though it's useless. And what Chuang Tzu recommend us is, why don't we take a nap underneath the shade of that useless tree? So he kind of compare two way of life. One is, being useful and to make something and to do something useful for human beings within the human society. That is it's our way of life, our usual way of life, in order to be good member of the society. We have to be useful. So we have to study something, and we learn the skill to make something. That is our common way of life. But what Chuang Tzu is saying is there's another way of life that is useless, beyond any use, and yet and its view without any discrimination. And this uselessness, this useless life, may have much, how can I say, greater use, under which it can make a shade for the people who is always looking for something and trying to chase after something or escaping from something. But of course we cannot stop living in that way, but at least to find that useless tree and take a peaceful rest might be a really good thing. So that is what Chuang Tzu is saying. Don't only simply caught up in this noisy, busy human world to make something, to be good for something, and to fight or compete with others to survive. That is okay, or that is what we do. But there might be another way of viewing this world or this life that is good for nothing, and that is okay. That is what that way of life is called wandering or strolling without a care. So without a care means no such discrimination and get something we want, or escaping from something we don't want. Chinese Buddhism, so Chuang Tzu was much earlier or older than Buddhism was introduced to China. So this has nothing to do with Buddhist teaching. But this is Taoist philosophy. That is a kind of a opposition of Confucianism. Confucianism is a teaching to be a good member of the society. How can we become useful for the people to make this world or society in order? To do so, we have to learn many things and train ourselves and study to become a virtuous person. But Taoist people is kind of opposed to that way of that philosophy. So, and they said, don't worry about, you know, that kind of man-made way of life, but be just as natural and just, you know, enjoy your life. So take a nap underneath this useless tree. That way of life is recommended by Taoist. And from Buddhism was introduced from India to China, especially Zen people combined the teaching of Buddhism and this kind of Taoist, kind of not a philosophy but attitude toward life. Don't care about the world, worldly, you know, details, but be natural. So this idea or philosophy or teaching influenced a lot to Chinese Zen, and Liu Kang really liked this kind of way of life. And now I start to talk about Liu Kang. Liu Kang was from a very prestigious family in that region. That region means northwest part of Japan called Echigo or Niigata. That is a very cold and country. They have lot of snow because wet. The wind from Siberia, from the north, carried a lot of humidity when it go across Japan Sea. And that wind with humidity hit the mountain in Japan, go up and make the snow. So, said in that region, they had more than 10 feet of snow. And it said entire town or city is covered with snow. That is where Liu Kang was born, and Liu Kang's family from the 14th century was the chief of that region or that town. You know, that kind of, you know, old prestigious family or people in that family were very well educated, and they're not so much interest in actual worldly business. And because Liu Kang was the first son, he was expected to took over the family business. And yet even his father didn't like that family business. He was very, very educated, and he was a well-known haiku poet, made haiku poems, and somehow he escaped from the family business and went to Kyoto, and it said he committed suicide somehow. Mm-hmm. And when Liu Kang was expected to take over that family business, but he was not good at all. So when he was 17 or 18, he escaped from the family and became a Zen monk. He started practice as a novice at a small Zen temple near from his town, and later he met a great Zen master, whose name was Koksen, and he went to his monastery in Okayama called Entsuji, and he practiced with this Zen master for more than 10 years, and he received Dharma transmission. So he completed the training to be a Zen teacher. But somehow he also escaped from the how can I say, institution of Buddhism. So when his teacher died, he left the monastery, and for many years, I think more than 10 years, we don't know, no one knew, no one knows who he was. Maybe he was walking around all over Japan. And when he was about 40 years old, he returned to his hometown and started to live in a small hermitage named Gogowan. So he, in a sense, he escaped twice. One, first from his family business. Second, from the Buddhist institution. So he became very free. So he was like the big bird. And he was like a useless tree. And his life is really useless in the from the common idea of how human being or how people should live in according to the standard, the Japanese standard at that time. Japanese standard at that time means Confucianism. Mm. So this person is good for nothing, really useless. And commonly, that kind of useless person become Buddhist monk and take care of the, not worldly but spiritual business. But he again he escaped from that kind of spiritual business. So he was really like a good for nothing person. And though he continued to be a monk. So he shaved his head and wear robes. His life was not like a usual monk's life in the monastery or temple. What he did was just live based on his begging or takuhatsu in the nearby villages and towns. And often during while he was begging, he forget about begging, and he started to pray with children. And he prayed with children all day, and returned home without anything in his bowl. Often his bowl was empty, so he didn't make anything life. But because of his poetry and calligraphy, he became very famous. If he didn't write poems and calligraphy, maybe no one know him. But somehow he wrote beautiful poems, and his calligraphy was really wonderful. So all people around him respected this person. He lived second half of 18th century and first beginning of 19th century. So he lived about 200 years ago. Dogen lived about 800 years ago. So Ryokan was much closer than Dogen. So we know many things about Ryokan's life. We have more information about his life than Dogen. About Dogen, we don't know. We don't even know who was his parents. Mm. But we know much of Ryokan, details in Ryokan's life. So Ryokan lived as a good for nothing, useless person. That is the background of his life and the basic kind of not a philosophy but idea how we see that kind of life. We don't simply see that kind of people as useless or it's used there, that's not only Ryokan, but there are many of that kind of people who lived in the monastery and just live. And somehow, as a part of Chinese and Japanese culture, we have a tradition to understand or appreciate those people who are free from worldly concerns. So, somehow, not only because he wrote beautiful poems or calligraphies, those kind of hermits who lived outside of this, you know, conventional world, have certain, you know, receive certain respect. But about from the person's view, there's some kind of a complex elements. For him, I think, you know, the reason he left family business, and also the reason he left the priest institutions, he really want to be, how can I say, like a big bird. So he, I think, from one side, he had a confidence. This is the way he want to live, and this is the way the things should be. But from another side, I think he has some kind of sense of guilty that he gave up his family, and he gave up a responsibility as a dharmaya of his teacher. So within him, there are two sides always. Sometimes these two sides are fighting. Sometimes they get together. That is a source of source of his poetry. So in order to understand the poems, including in this section, we need to understand that idea. That's why I talk about Chan Tzu's and his Ryokan's life. So we have a little more time, so I'd like to introduce one of his poems from this section. That is, I really like this poem. If you want to check in this book, this poem appeared in page 192, the first poem in this section of Strolling Without a Care. Let me first read this poem. All night carried on the eastern wind. A spring rain soaks my hut's thatch roof. The master of the house sleeps soundly through it all, oblivious to affairs in the floating world. In the first light of dawn, green mountains stand forth, and spring birds twitter on their branches. I too leave my shelter, strolling along without a care. Streams gliding through the fields of distant villages brim with water. Gorgeous flowers brighten the mountains' green forested slopes. That old man leading the ox, where is he from? The boy carrying the hoe, I wonder whose child he can be. The cycle of the seasons never pauses, and human beings all have their tasks. But what sort of work is there for me? To forever stand guard at the gate of my land. This is the end of the poem. So this poem is about is written in the spring.
What's the last word?
Last word, my land.
Land.
Yeah, to forever stand guard at the gates of my land. So this is a poem about a spring day. This expression, on the eastern wind. Eastern wind means spring wind. In the winter, the wind always came from north, especially that area, and it's very cold in that area. So when the wind blow from east, people are happy. Spring has come. And this time is also the time people start to work on the field. So probably during the winter, ryokan could not go out to the takuhatsu or begging. But now, it's getting warm and flowers start to bloom. So people start to work, and also therefore dogen. I'm sorry, not dogen. I'm still confusing. Ryokan left his hermitage and walked down to the village to do begging. That is what he's writing in this poem. So all night carried on the eastern wind, a spring rain soaks my hot thatch roof. So having rain means it's warm. And since the rain stopped, that's why, so the master of the house sleeps soundly through it all. During the winter it's very cold, so probably he couldn't sleep so well. There is a fireplace probably in his room, but during the night, the fire gone on. So during the night, it must be really cold, and he couldn't sleep so well. But when it's warm up, he could sleep well. And oblivious to affairs in the floating world. What's floating world? This floating world means a world in which we are living. It's always changing, and nothing, how can I say, rely on. This is a very well-known expression in Japanese. The word is ukiyo. Probably you know the Japanese woodblock printing named ukiyo-e. That is, the ukiyo-e means the painting of floating world. So the paintings painted in that kind of paintings is about this floating world. And of course, Japanese people have a sense that they enjoy that changes or floatings or impermanence in other world. Anyways, because this person, ryokan, is good for nothing person, he has no job, so he doesn't care about things happening in the floating world. That is what he's writing here. Oblivious to affairs in the floating world. In the first light of dawn, morning is coming, green mountains stand forth. So everything is green now around his hermitage. And spring birds twitter on their branches. I too leave my shelter. So he left his hut to do for begging. I'm strolling along without a care. This is a source of the title of this section, Strolling Without a Care. Actually, the word ryokan used in this line is not the same as the word appeared in Chuan Tzu, but meaning is the same. So he's walking, even though that is for doing takuhatsu or begging, he had no appointment or no time schedule. So he could start walking whenever he is ready or he wants. There's no one expected him. So there's no care about where he should go by what time. So he's walking with really strolling without a care. Streams gliding through the field. So now he described the scenery of the village, not in the hermitage in the mountains. Streams gliding through the field of distant villages brim with water. Gorgeous flowers brighten the mountains. Green forested slopes. So he could see the flowers on the mountains and the field. It's a scenery of the spring. It's very beautiful. And he saw some farmers already working on the field. So that old man leading the ox, where is he from? I'm pretty sure he knew all people there, but because he saw those people working on the field from the distance, he couldn't see exactly who that person is. So that means he was a kind of an observer or outsider from the group of people who is working hard in the field. So the old man leading the ox, where is he from? And the boy carrying the hoe, I wonder whose child he can be. So, you know, children also helped their parents. And children, each year children look different. They're getting bigger and bigger. So even though he knew who he was, who the boy was, but because boys are changing, so he wondered, who is this boy? Who's from which family from this person is? So he was kind of watching and observing, you know, people are working, they, you know, farmers, you know, do the same thing every year. And work there, you know, in the ancient times, you know, farmers work is really hard. They have to do many things every day. So they started to work from the very early in the morning, even before sunrise, and they continue to work until, you know, sunset. But ryokan had no such work. He was walking, you know, without care. So he has, when he wrote this part of this poem, I think he had a mixed feelings that, you know, I think one side he had a sense of guilty. You know, he escaped from his family business, and he is spending his life in this way of just, you know, begging and get some food. And if he has time, he wrote poems, and he just sleep. That way of good for nothing life, and these people are spending a lot busy life with a lot of hard work, and he was separate, he was outside, and yet he cannot be completely free from the connection with those people working hard. So he was not like a Kanshan, the cold mountain, the Chinese Cold Mountain also wrote many beautiful poems, and Ryokan loved Cold Mountain poems, and yet he couldn't be like the Cold Mountain. He was really hermit. He never cared about people in the world, but Ryokan was much closer with people in the world. Therefore, he has some, struggle, I think, with him.
Struggle.
So he has to describe, those people working hard. And the cycle of the seasons never pauses, and human beings all have their tasks. This means the four seasons go around in the same way each year, and following the change of seasons, people's life also repeat the same process. In the spring they start to work in the field, and during summer they have to really work hard taking care of the rice and the vegetables, and in the fall they had some harvest, and during winter they couldn't work in the field, so they worked inside the house. So people were working all year around following the change of seasons, and each person has something to do. Farmers work for farming, and craftsmen do what they need to do, and merchants do their own business. That is the idea of Confucianism. In each occupation, they have to work diligently. So Ryokan was out of that circle, but he is not yet completely free from that idea of, each person has their own occupation within a community. So they have to, do their best, make effort to keep the community, in a good shape. So, next he has a question to himself. But what sort of work is there for me? I think more literal translation is, what am I doing? What am I doing? I think it shows more kind of a sense of guilty, and even he questioned to himself, why I live in this way? So he's still not free from the world with society. And yet he cannot live in that world. That is, I think, a difficulty he had, even though he thought he has certain confidence in the way he lives. Even though he left home, his life is, the way Chuang Tzu, described seeing the world from up high. And that is in terms of Buddhism and Zen practice, it's free from discrimination, accepting everything without making any discrimination. That is the way of kind of enlightenment or beyond discrimination. And yet he still has a concern about the people in the world. That is a kind of to me, that is a very good quality of his poem. He was not really like the big bird, but he understand and he has sympathy with small birds. And somehow he said he's useless, he's a small bird like other people, and yet difference is he's useless. And he enjoyed it. He enjoyed it, and yet he has guilty, sense of guilty. But so his, how can I say, his life and his psychology is not so simple. That is kind of an attraction of Ryokan to me, or Ryokan's poem to me, because I have the same kind of feeling. When I left home and became a Buddhist priest, I had the same kind of sense of guilty, because I was also an oldest son. So within Japanese culture, I had a responsibility to take care of my parents, even though my family didn't have family business, because, my family had been a merchant in Osaka for six generations, but because of the bombing at the end of World War II, my family lost everything, and I like it because I was released from that kind of family responsibility. If my family didn't lose the wealth, maybe I was the person who took care of that, you know, property. Mm-hmm. But because my family lost everything, my father said, you are free. You have nothing to inherit. And I trusted. I accept what my father said. But for him, for my father, to be a Buddhist monk is more than he expected. So my parents were not happy at all when I became a monk. So I had a kind of a sense of guilty that I give up my responsibility toward my family. So I really kind of resonate with what Ryokan is writing, or for how he feels. Oh, it's already 11:30, I'm sorry. Anyway, this is the end of the poem. To forever stand guard at the gates of my land. My land means his family place, where he was there. So even though he left home, but he couldn't left the place. That was his kind of a complex, not simple psychology. Well, I'm sorry I talked too much or too long. I'm going to read some of the poems in this section this afternoon. Okay, thank you for listening.